Hey there, thanks for listening and welcome to another episode of State of Reality, your guide to buying and selling real estate in the real world. I'm your host, DJ Stavropoulos, licensed realtor here in Atlanta, Georgia. In season two of this podcast, I'm focusing on very specific topics to help supplement everything I covered in season one, which was all the foundational material about buying and selling a home. But don't feel as if you have to listen to all of those first if you don't want to. They'll be waiting there for you. This episode covers a very specific topic. What happens when you consider downsizing? There are lots of reasons why people consider downsizing, but when you get right down to it, it doesn't always make sense. First, there's the financial side of it. Most people downsize thinking their monthly mortgage payments will be less. Second, a smaller home should be less of a burden on you. Although many people think downsizing is relegated to empty nesters, a lot of other people also downsize for a variety of reasons. In this episode, I'll use my own personal example to describe the conundrum you can find yourself in when you do the deep analysis and perhaps realize that maybe downsizing just doesn't make sense after all, at least not right now. Everyone mistakenly makes it look so easy. Just sell all your junk and move into a smaller home. It's not as easy as it looks. I'll get started after the break. What is downsizing? It's essentially moving to a smaller home, and people do it for all kinds of reasons. Many times, it's seen as a late life move when your kids are grown and you no longer need the large home you needed in your prime earning and child rearing years. Plus, after years of maintaining all the space, not to mention the yard, a lot of people welcome the idea of a smaller home because it means less to take care of. And that also usually means less money spent on utilities, maintenance, and homeowners insurance. If you're not retired, there can be other reasons to downsize. Divorce, moving closer to work, moving to a new city, moving to wherever you want to because the pandemic said you could be remote forever until corporate America changed its mind and then the workforce revolted. I think you get it. There are lots of reasons to downsize. You can even just have a revelation one day where you stop and realize, hey, I or we don't need all of this space, and I don't want to be paying for it either, and I don't want to clean it anymore. And if I have to spend an hour mowing that lawn one more time because I don't want to pay someone to do it, I'm going to go crazy. Technically speaking, downsizing refers to the size of the home, but in the context of this discussion, I'm also assuming it means the home costs less than your current home. Otherwise, you're not downsizing 100%. If you're moving to a smaller home that costs the same or even more, then that's changing only the size of your home and not the financial responsibility that comes with it. So from my perspective, downsizing is both physical and financial. But as you'll soon learn, it certainly is possible to buy a much smaller home and pay the exact same price you paid for your current one. And no one really wants to do that, right? You'll soon learn that because of market forces, if you want to achieve both objectives, a smaller home that costs less, you may have to move to a less expensive part of town, perhaps very far away from where you are right now. I'll dig into the details of my personal situation after the break. So, here's my personal story, and it should illustrate some of the things that can come up when you consider downsizing. I now live alone in a 3,000 square foot house on a 200 foot deep lot with a two-car garage I don't use. Let me explain. I separated 3 years ago, and my divorce was final a year ago. My dog passed away around Christmas time 2021, and my driveway gate battery died at least 6 months ago, and after replacing the battery and it dying again, I just gave up. I'm not a fan of the company Ghost, which makes the electronic arm that keeps dying, but that's another story. So now I park in the driveway outside the gate or even in the street. It's so strange now to think that I found it necessary to drive down my long driveway and put my car into the garage every time I was done using it. but I've learned that it's okay and perfectly safe, so far, to leave it outside. Yes, it gets dirtier, but now we just wash it on Saturdays to address that. Long story short, does a single guy really need to live alone in a house with 4 bedrooms, 3.5 baths, a living room and dining room, plus a combined family room and kitchen with a separate breakfast room? Oh, and there's a screen porch in the back and a small patio, and a pantry that sleeps too, and a butler's pantry without a butler, which means that I am actually the butler. Do I need all of this space? Probably not. But moving is hard. I've owned only 3 houses, and it's really a pain to move, not to mention selling your house, finding a new one, and coordinating all of that. It doesn't always work out. When we sold my first house, the buyer's bank kept moving our closing date, so our furniture was sitting in storage. We had to move to a hotel for 2 weeks with a dog and 2 cats, and then move a second time into the new house and get all of our belongings out of storage. When we sold our second house, it went more smoothly because we did a lease back and got to stay in the house for 2 weeks after the closing and move out slowly. We were actually in Iceland during the closing, so we had a friend sign all the paperwork using power of attorney, and I don't think we ever got copies of it. I think I've convinced myself that I'm never moving again because it's just not worth the effort. 3 homes has been plenty for me, but I digress. When you downsize, it's often a move to a smaller home, which logically would mean a smaller mortgage or no mortgage at all, but that's not always true. It depends on interest rates and the size of your loan. I never thought I'd be in this situation, but now that I am, I'm starting to really understand why so many sellers are not selling their houses right now, which is one contributing factor to the huge imbalance between supply and demand in the housing market. In the days of super low interest rates, around 2-3%, you could sell your house willy-nilly at the drop of a hat and find a new one because you'd be paying the same interest rate on your new loan. But when rates are suddenly double, that's a huge disincentive to sell and buy. Who on earth wants to pay double the interest rate on a new loan? Not me. Even if your new mortgage is substantially lower than your current one, the higher rates can easily translate to the same mortgage payment or even a higher one. Plus, in the strong seller's market Atlanta's been in for the past decade, buying a new home isn't easy. Do you really want to be competing in multiple offer situations if that's the scenario in the neighborhood you're looking and the price point you're planning on? Some people just don't think it's worth it. Of course, I'm not saying no one is moving. Sometimes it's beyond your control, like your company is relocating you or your kids are about to start school and you want to be in a better school system. But it's a lot to do. And now it's made harder by higher interest rates, not enough homes, and constantly rising values. In sum, buyers are still out there buying, but our inventory is so low right now that it's making the imbalance huge. And I think part of it has to do with sellers realizing that despite being able to get record high prices for their homes, is it really worth it if you don't really have to move? I'll talk about the numbers, my personal numbers, after the break. Time to talk numbers. Let me explain the 4 scenarios I've been examining for myself. You can do the same for your specific situation. I paid roughly $700,000 for my home in 2016, and my mortgage is at 3.75%. I borrowed $410,000. I currently owe $325,000 on the house. And because of the pandemic's impact on the market, my home is probably now worth $950,000. So in 6 short years, I have paid the mortgage down $85,000, and the value of my home has increased another $250,000 for a total gain in equity of $335,000. Plus, I started with a $279,000 down payment. So my current equity is about $625,000. Remember that number. When I think about downsizing, I'm talking about selling and buying a home worth less than the current value of my home. So I'm not using the original purchase price of $700 as the value. I'm using $925 instead. I have come up with 4 different scenarios for downsizing. 1, a home costing $800,000. 2, one for $700,000. 3, $600,000. And finally, 4, a home costing $500,000. If you consider the original price of $700,000 instead, which is another way to do it and probably more correct, then technically only 2 of these are downsizing. Buying for $800,000 is actually upsizing, and buying for $700,000 is a lateral move. But hear me out. After running numbers using my current equity, current interest rates, and my new proposed loan, it's become very clear that only three of these make any sense to do, and it really depends on what your ultimate goal is. You'll understand the goal more clearly when I explain the numbers. So let's do that. 1. Selling and buying an $800,000 home makes no sense financially. Even with the equity I have in my home, I'd still need to borrow about $250,000. And with interest rates where they are, my new mortgage could easily be the same or higher than where I'm currently at. 2. Selling and buying a $700,000 home cuts my mortgage substantially by $1,000 to $1,500 per month. That's a lot of money to be saving every month that I could be spending on other things. But is it enough to justify a move? It depends. Do I have the energy to do it? Do I want to do it badly enough? 3. Selling and buying for $600,000 makes sense financially. Given my $625,000 equity, after all the closing costs, I could buy a new home and have no mortgage at all. And 4. Selling and buying for $500,000 makes even more sense financially. Not only would I not have a mortgage, but I'd net the excess equity in my current home to the tune of up to $100,000. So, in sum, if your goal is to reduce your monthly payment only, then $700,000 will do that. But if you don't want a mortgage at all, you need to buy at $600,000 or $500,000. And if you need extra cash, then $500,000 is the only one that works. Depending on what your goal is, that will dictate which one or more of these scenarios will get you there. So those are the numbers, and your numbers will be different. But I think it's a good framework to wrap around the idea of downsizing if you're thinking about it. I've had this idea running through my head for 3 years now, but it wasn't until I mapped it out by price point and analyzed the math that I realized they are not equally effective or logical until you do this. And more importantly, clearly understand your goal. Without the goal, you're just flying blind. And I will admit that until now, I have been flying blind, selling and buying newer, larger homes for more money without really fitting that into any type of financial planning framework. But now I'm doing the opposite. I'm thinking very strategically about how to use this investment, my home, to achieve other life goals that require lots of money, like starting a family. I'll talk about the psychological aspects of these numbers after the break. Now that I've laid out the four scenario price points and the fact that only the latter three make sense financially, let me explain the additional burden to overcome: the psychological impact of price inflation. In other words, the $700,000 I paid in 2016 doesn't get me the same house today, 7 years later. Instead, if I want the house I have now, which I paid $700,000 for but is worth $925,000, then I have to buy a house priced at $925,000, which I don't want to do, because that would cost a fortune, both in terms of interest rates and the mortgage. It's clearly not downsizing. The 700 number is one of the three that makes sense, but there's something so significant about that number because that is exactly what I paid for my current home, which makes it incredibly easy to compare my home to everything on the market priced at 700, and nothing really compares, at least not in this part of town. So the price you paid for your current home will ultimately factor into the psychology of downsizing when you realize how much less that may get you down the road. For $700,000, all I can get is a new 3-bedroom, 2-bath home, probably not with a garage and on absolutely no land, or a townhouse of some kind. Yes, I could move 30 miles out into the suburbs where I used to live, but that's not the same market, and that's not where I want to live. With two exceptions, Serenby and Trillith, both unique developments south of Atlanta. Serenby is totally out of the question because homes there cost roughly $100,000 more than a comparable home at Trillith, and Trillith is pricey enough given the premium people are willing to pay to live in this European-like village. At Trillith, $700,000 gets me 3 bedrooms, 2 to 3 baths, perhaps a 1-car garage, but unlikely, around 1,600 to 1,800 square feet. I have 3,000 right now. And if I do get a yard, it's a plot next to my house with the same footprint, so I have to park my car there as well. I mean, that's doable, but clearly not what I have now. So unlike the 600 and 500 price points where you know you're going to get less, 700 is particularly painful because you ask yourself this question: why on earth would I pay the same amount of money I paid for my current home to get half as much home and land and no garage? Seriously, why? Because that is exactly what I would be doing. And that psychological barrier makes it difficult to do this. You may be okay downsizing, but not paying the same money for much less. Moving down to the 600 and 500 price points is even harder. You get even less house for your money. So although it makes more sense financially, the lower you go, the things you have to give up grow exponentially. It's one thing to downsize to a home that's worth $100,000 less than your current home, but to downsize to a home worth $400,000 less, that's the price of an entire home. You're literally getting half of the house you currently have. And maybe that's fine for people who really want that much less home. So keep this in mind. There may be psychological barriers to spending what you paid for your current home and getting much less. After the break, I'll talk about the investment perspective of all of this. Now that I've talked about the numbers and the psychology of downsizing, let me say something about your home as an investment. See, I always tell people that the more money they invest, all other things being equal, the more that will earn them over time. It's pretty simple. $1,000 will grow to become less than $10,000 will over a 25-year period if they grow at the same rate. So buy as much home as you can afford to, because the value of it will increase to a much larger number over time. If all homes are increasing at 5% per year, then that 5% translates to more each year and compounds over time. When and if you downsize to a less expensive home, you're giving up big future earnings. In other words, giving up your home means you're reducing its future earning potential because you're buying a less valuable investment. In my case, do I want to watch $950,000 grow for another 20 years, or do I want to sell the house and watch $600,000 grow? It will never make as much as my current home. Let me explain how my house journey has turned out from an investment perspective. There is definitely a cost to cashing out now. I guess I should really discuss this with my financial planner, but who knows how complex that conversation might get. In my case, I put $60,000 down on my first home here in Atlanta in 1996. I bought a house for $240,000 in Kennesaw. I remember wondering if that was too expensive a house to buy at the time. I was looking at homes in the $180,000 range as well. Of course, I thought $240,000 was too much to spend because it was my first home, but I'm really glad I did buy that house. However, it didn't appreciate very much during the 17 years I owned it. I sold it for $280,000, so it grew only by $40,000, or 17% over that time period, roughly 1% per year. That's an awful return. But you don't really know that until you sell. You're not thinking about your house like the stock market and checking its value daily or weekly or even monthly. You only really care when it's time to sell, and then it's the most important thing in the world. In sum, I went out on a limb on the first house, and it wasn't the best investment, but the next two houses made up for that. House two I purchased in the city of Atlanta in 2013. It was a fully renovated Tudor priced at $579,000. I think the woman paid $250,000 for it before flipping it. We were looking in the $400,000 range, and even that felt really high, given we were selling for $280,000. Not only was I starting all over again with a 30-year mortgage, I was buying a house worth twice as much as what I was selling. Very scary, but it all worked out. I had roughly the same exact mortgage on house two, about $2,600 a month for everything. We sold that house 3 years later for $675,000, making $90,000 in just 3 years. We were not looking, but found a better house, a brand new house nearby with everything we wanted, for only $689,000, roughly $120,000 more than we paid for house two. I'm not sure how this all worked out, but the equity from house two and paying down that mortgage got me the exact same mortgage and the exact same rate on house three in 2016. I borrowed $410,000 at 3.75% as I had done 3 years earlier, which means my mortgage payment stayed exactly the same. recall that the equity in my current home is about $625. The moral of the story is this: buying real estate can and should build your wealth over time. And I now understand how people in California can afford these million-dollar homes. You buy and sell and capitalize on the equity, much of which comes from rising values. Here I am, 27 years later. I turned a $60,000 down payment into $625,000, 10 times what I started with. And I'm not sure any investments in the stock market would have done as well. I would say don't try this at home, but you actually should. I didn't plan it, but it just happened. So now I'm a firm believer. These days, everyone is raving about the billions in equity that Americans now have in their homes, but it's not that simple. I mean, it's all on paper. You can't do anything with it until you either sell, take out a home equity loan, or do a cash out refinance, which brings you back to the original problem of high interest rates. I have to say, it does feel really nice to know that I have so much equity contributing to my net worth, but what does it really get me right now? Nothing at all. I remember a year ago when I had to settle my divorce and was trying to figure out a way to tap that equity. I applied for home equity lines of credit but was turned down 3 times. The reason for that is if you borrow against the value of your home, you need to be able to pay off that on top of the mortgage you already have. So unless you have a ton of cash lying around to pay off the second loan, or you get a new job paying you much more, you can't get the loan in the first place. And if you have all that cash to pay it off, then you don't really need the loan. I ended up pulling retirement money out of my savings and having to pay a 10% penalty plus income tax on it. So I had a huge tax bill in 2022. And because I didn't have the cash to pay the huge tax bill when it was due on April 18th, 2023, I paid it late to avoid another 10% penalty I would have incurred by pulling out more retirement money early. I waited until the end of May when I turned 59 and a half. Why? Because I was correctly advised by my tax preparer that the interest and penalty for paying my taxes late would be much less than the 10% early withdrawal penalty. There is no penalty once you're 59 and a half. It was actually only $1,200. The 10% early withdrawal penalty would have been $7,000. I distinctly remember at the time comparing my home equity to my retirement savings and coming to the following conclusion. Home equity grows slowly over time and is extremely illiquid, which means you can't easily get to that money. On the other hand, retirement savings are more volatile, but much more accessible, with a penalty, of course. But if you need $100,000 and cannot get this equity out of your house, are you really going to sell and move, or are you going to dip into your retirement savings? I think most people would do the latter, even if their financial advisor advises against it. So, those are my thoughts on downsizing. It's a real pickle for me and not something I ever thought about, because people always focus on buying their first home or upgrading to a bigger and better home. But at some point, most of us may consider downsizing. And this is what I have personally learned by going through the process of thinking all about it for years. And in the end, I don't think it's something I'll be doing anytime soon. With rates as high as they are, the transaction costs of selling and buying, and the complexity of finding a better home in this crazy market, I'm staying put. I've convinced myself that the grass isn't greener on the other side. It's a very vibrant green right where I am, and I'm going to do all I can to keep it that way. Until next time, thanks for listening. I published this episode yesterday, but over the past 24 hours, have been thinking more about one point I made that I was on the fence about, and that is whether to use the current value of your home instead of the price you paid for your home as one of the criteria for defining downsizing. Recall that I paid $700,000 for my house, and it's now worth $950,000. I wasn't sure which of these to use as the cutoff point for identifying downsizing options. On further reflection, it's become crystal clear. So here's what I believe. $950,000 is a lateral move. $700,000 is definitely downsizing. A lateral move is selling your home and buying a home of the same value, in my case, $950,000, which doesn't meet either of the criteria for downsizing. It should be the same size home and it should cost the same, perhaps more due to higher interest rates. So it's not smaller and it doesn't necessarily cost me less. On the flip side, selling your home and buying a home costing exactly what you paid for your current home is definitely downsizing because it meets both criteria, the physical and the financial. Due to rising values, spending $700K today will get me a smaller home than I currently have, which I paid $700K for in 2016. And from a financial perspective, it's not the price as much as the monthly payment that will be lower. Despite higher interest rates today, my monthly payment should be lower because I'm taking out a much smaller loan. That's because I have a lot more equity in the home due to me paying down the mortgage and its value increasing, which translates to a much larger down payment on the new home, which means a much smaller mortgage. In 2016, I borrowed $410,000 at 3.75%. Today, spending $700,000 on a home means borrowing only $250,000 at 7%. Running these numbers, that's how I arrived at the monthly payment. That's $1,000 to $1,500 less than my current payment. So the price I paid for my current home is definitely considered a downsizing option in the four options I described earlier. Forget about the fact that the home price is exactly the same. It's the monthly cost that will be lower. And recall that I said buying at $800,000 makes no sense. It looks like downsizing because I'd be moving from a $950,000 home to an $800,000 home. But when I run the numbers, my monthly payment is exactly the same. The principal and interest is actually $700 less, but other variables such as taxes, HOA fees, and homeowners insurance erode that savings. So it may not really cost me less, despite the home price being $150,000 lower. In sum, a lateral move is buying a home worth what your current home is worth. Buying a home costing what you paid for your current home is downsizing. And anything in between those two price points really depends on the numbers. That's all for this episode. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you like what you've heard, please tell your friends. And if you absolutely love it, please rate the podcast on whatever platform you listen on, whether that's Anchor, Apple, Breaker, Google, iTunes, Pocket Cast, Radio Public, or Spotify. Tune in again for another episode of State of Reality, where I shed light on real estate in the real world.